Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. My guest today is Chloe Hong. We spoken today. I hope she has the information that I presented to her. Okay, we will look forward to that later on in the show, hopefully later on in the show. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better place. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading and podcasting the show. It means a lot to me and it means a lot to the show. This is the talk of our times, making the world a better place. Let no one rip your world apart because they will sure try. And it's all about making a better you by being informed, inspired, empowered, and educated on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Not only educating you, but also educating myself. I mean, I'm learning just like you are. And if I have something to offer that you, the audience out there, if you think that you can learn from and benefit from, I'm glad to share it. And if you have something that you think that I can benefit and learn from, I hope you would be proud to share that also. Call in and make a difference. You know, I mean, make a difference. You know, we have to try to together make the world a better place. We want to stop the violence. You know, the more we can say stop the violence, it seems like it's just more pronounced. And I think I'm going to touch on just for a small bit today, domestic violence. Men beating up women. What can I say? I want to touch on domestic violence for a little bit during the show because I think it is so. I mean, this is a issue and a topic and a situation that is going on every day, everywhere, anywhere. And it's just another an issue involving violence against women, violence against young girls, and it's every place, and it has to stop. It has to stop, just like violence against African Americans, violence against police, violence everywhere has to stop, and we have to try and do that. And that's one of the one of the criteria for the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. It is 71 degrees, folks, in the city of Chicago. And it's, well, the sun was out a little bit, but it's gone back in. It's hiding again. But it's great. It's a pleasant day. It's a pleasant fall day. The only gripe I really have about the day itself is that it ends too soon. I mean, daylight saving time is coming up pretty soon. And it's really going to be short. And that's the only bummer about it. But other than that, we have to be blessed because we got up this morning to do whatever we have to do, go to work, go to school, hang around the house, whatever you're doing. As long as it's a good day, it's a good day for you and you feel good about it. And one of the best things I think for you to do is to try to help someone else. And that's the greatest thing. I've had several guests on the show. Something's wrong with my throat. Sorry there. I had to clear my throat for a second. Anyway, this is a great place to be, the George Wilder Jr. Show, one of the finest radio shows and radio hosts in the city of Chicago. I have been told, I'm not saying that, I've been told that, and I do have to agree. I do think it's one of the finest, maybe one of the best. And we're still trying to find our way out of the haystack. If you know what I'm talking about. All right. Author Chloe Hung on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to have commentary. And some people say, what is commentary? Well, commentary can be anything issue based, you know, anything that's being discussed. And one of the things I want to, like I said before, I want to touch on is domestic violence, and because it's everywhere. And I hope all the women out there, young girls out there who are suffering from this, because it is, I've talked about domestic violence on the show for a long time. I mean, you can go back and dig in the archives and pull out shows, episodes of the show where I have really, really blasted the culprits of domestic violence. And we're going to have to stop doing that again. Domestic violence, Alzheimer's, diabetes. I mean, I have really covered these subjects to the max. But sometimes you, with those who are just finding the show, finding out about the show, finding out about me, some of those things are going to have to be revised, relived, and redone, and maybe in a better format this time. So we're going to do a little bit about domestic violence today. We're not going to harp on it. We're not going to stay there because we have to move on with other issues, other topics that's facing America. And tonight is the vice president debate on television. Yeah, it's the vice president debate. Let's see, Tim Kaine and Mike Pence. Who? Most people don't even know these guys, you know, and that's not their fault. That's the fault of the people who don't know them, because Americans should know them. These are the vice president candidates who are one of their main jobs to do tonight is to make the to make their bosses look good, which are Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Sorry. Their job is to make these guys look good. I don't know. I don't know about Donald Trump. I don't know how you can make this guy look good. Dodging taxes and saying it's a good thing. When the rest of us, we have to pay these taxes, and he dodges them and calls himself brilliant. I don't agree with that. So the vice president's debate will be tonight. I'm thinking 8 o'clock. Tim Kaine, he's Hillary Clinton's vice president, VP. Mike Pence, former governor, he's Donald Trump's VP. And I don't think this debate, no matter who wins or who loses, is going to have much sway on the national polling data. I really don't. I don't. But it would be nice to see Tim Kaine come out the winner, and hopefully, Hillary can get a 2 or 3% bounce from this, even though she's already leading in the polls, from my understanding. It's tonight, and I will be watching it. I'm not going to pay too much close attention to it, but it will be. We will be watching it and trying to figure some things out. You know, if there's any bombshells, I'm pretty sure it'll be on YouTube later on. All right, listening to the George Wanda Jr. Show. Follow me on Block Talk Radio. Follow me right here. Follow me Facebook, Twitter. I'm all over the place. Google. I'm here. Cubs, the Chicago Cubs. I mean, I don't know why I should have started the show off with the Chicago Cubs. These young guys are just talented. And in 3 days, 3 days away from now, they will start their postseason. They're in the playoffs. I mean, they are in the playoffs. And these guys are actually, I mean, from my observation and from watching the games and hearing about this, these guys are World Series material. They are the real thing. They are the real deal. And I'm rooting for these guys to go on to the World Series. This is a group of talented young men. There's no doubt about it. This is a group of talented young men. And now there's a lot of people coming out of the woodwork supporting them, especially old-time players coming out and supporting these guys. These guys are good. They're good. I got to give credit to their manager. I have to give credit to Joe Madden, their manager. I mean, this guy is a genius. You know, but the Cubs, if you think about it, if you remember, the Cubs made the playoffs last year, but they floundered, I believe, in the first round. They lost all four games because basically the playoffs are, you know, in baseball, best out of seven, you know. So we'll just have to check them out, because I do think, you know, I'm giddy about it because they're Chicago. I mean, anything that's positive that's coming out of Chicago, that's not some young child being gunned down or somebody being shot on the street corner, is good news. And I always cherish good news coming out of the city of Chicago, letting people around the world know that Chicago is not the murder capital of the world. We have our crime just like any other city, but we're not the murder capital of the world. But, you know, a lot of things has to be done to bring down the crime statistics that we do have in the city of Chicago. That is too high and growing if the police and some other people do not get on, you know, see what's going on in the city of Chicago. I mean, like I said before, this show is about making the world a better place, and I'm here to try to make Chicago a better place, you know, but people have to implement some of these ideas that I have, or either tell me that they're not workable, and then we'll go with some other ideas, because that's what it's all about. And I applaud all the community leaders around the city of Chicago who are out there trying to steer our young people in the right direction. That's great. That's wonderful. And I don't have much admiration for those people who are just laying around, sitting around and just talking about the violence and just letting us know it's there, but not doing anything to try to solve it, not coming up with any solutions. If you're out here, try to come up with a solution to solve the violence and get involved. Don't just talk about it. Put some action behind those words. All right, you're listening to the George Wanda Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. People, yeah, there are dead people every day in the city of Chicago, but, you know, we got to get over that. We got to find out how to bring this stuff down. You're listening to the talk of our times all over the place. Let's see what we got. Mike Pence, that should be on later. There's the mayor of Chicago has a program that has found some money for called Becoming a Man, trying to get at-risk young men off the street before they join a gang or commit a crime or be a victim of crime. I think that's a good thing. You know, steering young people away from gangs, I think that's a good thing. And I applaud everybody out there who are trying to do these things. Because if you can steer a young man away from a gang, or hopefully try to get a young man from being caught up in gang activity, I think that's a great accomplishment. And I applaud all those people. I even applaud the mayor if he's not doing this for political reasons. Who knows what these people try to tug at our hearts with. All right, you're listening to George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to do a little domestic violence later on. We're going to talk about crime. We're going to talk about some things in the news. This is weird to me. I saw, it's not Halloween. I don't think it's Halloween until October 30th, but I see people out here dressed up in Halloween costumes. Yeah, they look creepy. They look really creepy. I mean, this guy, I saw dressed up in a skeleton-like costume, and he looked real creepy. He will look, I mean, Halloween is not even maybe a few weeks away, and he looked really creepy. And this has gotten me to talk about the clowns that are appearing around the city and around America, and these clowns are looking very, very creepy, you know, and they're threatening to kill. You know, so I don't know. And a lot of these clowns have been arrested. These creepy clowns. And I'm hearing that they are really giving a bad name. These creepy clowns are actually giving a bad name to good clowns. I used to have a coworker, and one of her part-time jobs was being a clown. You know, she was a clown, and I'm pretty sure a good one, even though I never saw her dressed as a clown, but she went around, but she was a clown. And sometimes she would walk around the office and she started acting like a clown. And I thought it was amusing, you know, so this is what this reminds me of, a coworker I used to work with dressed as a clown, but she was a good clown. She was a funny clown. She was one of those clowns that were actually proud to be a clown and to bring smile to young children's faces. But now we have clowns walking the streets who are deadly, who are threatening to kill kids at recess. At least some of the policemen have said. Okay, a North Suburban school was on lockdown Tuesday afternoon after children told staff that three people in clown masks, two of them possibly armed, threatened to kill them while they were at recess. This is according to the Waukegan Police Department. Children at the Greenwood Elementary School told staff just before 2 p.m. that three people dressed in clown masks stood at the edge of the school's property and taunted them. This is serious, folks. This is totally, totally serious. And it's putting a damper on the industry, from what I'm told. It's seeing it. Well, if you want to know something, they're saying it's hard to be a clown nowadays because a lot of clowns are not being called on or accepted at some of these events to entertain children and adults. And that's something. I mean, we've got a few people who are actually clowns pretending to be clowns. It's just ridiculous. Wow. And I'm hearing that the actor, what's his name? The guy who played Zoolander, his name is, I'm going to come to it. Anyway, he discovered a few years ago that he had prostate. He was on the verge of having prostate cancer. So he had this PAS test that found this cancer. And I'm assuming that the doctors, he had an operation maybe or something like that. Now he's cancer free. Wow. That's something. And that's early detection of it. That's early detection of prostate cancer. So the doctors are saying, get that PSA test, you know, and to nip it in the bud, catch this cancer in the early stages, and you will wind up cancer-free. But that's not saying that the cancer will not return sometime down the line. So nothing is set in stone. But that's something. he is now cancer free. As soon as I come up with that name, folks, I'll get it out there to you as soon as it comes to me. All righty. Anxiety on the rise in the U.S. coast. Hurricane Matthew. Yeah, this guy. It's a Hurricane Matthew. I mean, where did they get all these names for these hurricanes? But anyway, this hurricane is bombing the East Coast. It is moving up. It is moving up Cuba, Miami, the Caribbean, the Bahamas, Miami, Haiti, impoverished Haiti, this hurricane. So we have to pray for those people in the eye of this hurricane, you know. So that's one of the things we have to do. And that's something we have to, you know, because you never know, it could be knocking at, this hurricane could be knocking at your door. So we want to pray for people who are out there in the eye of the storms. And it is bad. For according to weather reports, it is truly, truly not good. And it is not. It is not. Kim Kardashian was robbed. I guess you guys heard. His the guy's name is Ben Stiller. He's an actor, comedian, and a director. And he announced today on the Howard Stern television show, radio show, that he was diagnosed with prostate cancer at the age of 46. He's 50 now, okay? So he caught it early, as I was stating a bit. Okay, Ben Stiller. I mean, I've seen some of his movies. You know, some I like, some I didn't. Kanye West reschedules his Philly show after Kim's robbery. His wife was robbed. So he had stopped his show to go check her out. And then I guess everything's fine. She's okay. The jury's jury, $1,000. I mean, $10,000 worth of jewelry was stolen or something like that. And now he's restarting his show because she's okay. Her life is more important than the diamonds and all the jewelry that these bad guys have taken. I got a feeling these bad guys will be caught, though. I really do. I have a feeling they will be caught. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back. Stay with us, folks.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
All right, Donald Trump is in serious trouble, folks. He is in serious trouble. Judging from the post-debate polls, this guy is in serious trouble. Last week, he had the worst week of any presidential candidate in the history of the United States. And history suggests that his chances for recovery are bleak. Donald Trump is in trouble. According to this, Donald Trump dropped in the polls following the first presidential debate, allowing Hillary Clinton to open up a significant lead. History suggests that the Republican nominee will not recover. I mean, he will not win the presidency of the United States. But that remains to be seen, because you know what? Anything can happen. Anything can happen. And let's hope not much happens, okay? The first presidential debate usually benefits a candidate who is running against the incumbent president's party. In the 10 elections from 1976 to 2012, the challenger has risen in the national polls 8 times, according to data compiled by the 538. That calculation is based on the straight average of polls conducted 1 week before the debates and 1 week after the debate. Okay, basically they're saying here, folks, that Donald Trump doesn't have a chance in hell of being president of the United States. I think we all knew that. I think we all knew that. They're saying Hillary Clinton has an 82% chance of being president, and Donald Trump has a 17.7% chance of being president. That's it. That is just about nil. That is just about nil. So Donald Trump, they're saying candidates who are ahead in the polls after the first debate tend to win the election. Okay. But still and all, I want to make sure that we do not get complacent, because anything can happen during this debate. You don't always believe everything you read, even if it's on the internet, if it's on the television. You have to check that stuff out, research it, and then come back with some facts, because we don't want to steer you wrong on the George Wilder Jr. show. You don't want to be steered wrong anywhere, you know what I'm saying? But you want to check these things out before you decide to believe in them. But this looks as if it's in, you know, this is going to stand. It looks like that she's going to win the election, you know, because Donald Trump keeps burying him. He buries him on his own self. He shoots himself in the foot on this thing. So it's candidates who are ahead in the polls after the first debate tend to win the election. Okay, so that, you know, that favors Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people who are clapping their hands on that. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Thank you, folks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to all my listener, callers, guests. Thanks to everybody that have made this show what it is. And they're calling this show the Chicago's Finest. And I do appreciate that. I really appreciate that. And that keeps me to wanting to go on and on and on, because it's fun. It's fun and I love it. All right, let's go to the telephones. Okay. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hi, George. Thanks for having me today.
Chloe Hung?
Yes, that's me, correct.
Oh, wow. Thanks for being on the show. You're always welcome here, and thanks for coming. Thanks for being a part of it. Okay, tell my audience, give my audience a little bit of your bio and tell us what you do. I know you're a writer, you're an author, so you can tell us about that.
Sure. I am the author of an upcoming book called Strength in Numbers. And here's a little background about me. I currently live in my hometown in Malaysia. So I'm like way across the world from the United States, actually.
Right now, as you're speaking.
Yep.
You sound great. Go right ahead.
So I graduated with an actuarial science and finance degree from the U.S. And I'm someone who actually loves a challenge and have a passion for mathematics upon high school graduation. I was one of the top scorers in math in high school, and I passed all of my exams with flying colors. So I heard that actuarial science was one of the most difficult university degrees to pursue when I graduated high school. and being unsure of what I wanted to study and where I wanted to go in life at that point of time, I decided to be one of the only two students from my high school to actually pursue this difficult degree. I encountered my first failure when I was attempting my first actual professional paper in the United States. And my second failure was actually on that same particular paper. And being a very determined person and refusing to give up, I worked harder and succeeded in my third attempt at that same paper. Thankfully, my second paper only required two attempts. And fortunately for me, my persistence in my actual professional exams allowed me to complete my university degree with two actual professional papers in hand. And 1 year after university graduation, I completed two more papers, getting better each time. And through this book, Strength in Numbers, I actually hope to help math enthusiasts and actual students decide if actual science is the right pursuit for them. Actual exams are definitely not for the faint of heart. And I strongly believe and know from firsthand experience that a good and successful actuary must have the passion, the right mindset, the right attitude, and also a lot of determination.
Yeah. So what made you want to, what made you so passionate for math?
I guess the main reason why I thought I was very passionate about math after graduating high school was because I was one of the top scorers in math. So math came really easily to me in high school. So instead of like many students who struggle with math in high school, I was able to grasp the concept easily and also score really good grades in school. So naturally, because of the external motivation, the good scores, the good grades, and being a top scorer, I thought, okay, maybe math is my thing, and I really want to do math college.
So you found your niche. Math was your niche because, you know, like you just got through saying, majority of the people in grade school, high school, and even some college, math is one of the subjects they try to run away from. Including myself, I wasn't good at math, you know, but I was pretty good at basic math. But when it got to trigonometry, geometry, and, you know, all of this kind of stuff, I was lost. And I think most kids are. But you excelled at those things and more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was one of the frustrations that many students encountered. Because math is so complex, it's not theoretical. You have to do a lot of practice in the field of math to actually get good at it. And that's why many students fail in the attempt. So that's why they get frustrated and then they think math is not their thing. And really, it's okay because not everyone would have a passion for numbers.
Yeah. So if you're as good as... If someone is as good as in math as you are, so what career would they go into that they can use those kinds of mathematical skills?
Well, back in 8 years ago when I graduated high school, I was looking around for career options for a math passionate student. And what I was told at that time, the best career option, if you only wanted to do math, was being a lecturer or a professor in a university. And that was something that I really didn't really like because I didn't see myself teaching math because it's such a difficult subject to teach, especially when students are not passionate about it.
I was going to say the majority of students aren't passionate about it. But you know, it's like one of those subjects that you have to take because you will need a credit in order to graduate. So a lot of people take math because it's a credit that they're going to need to, you know, graduate, but they're not really passionate about it. You know, but my son, he's pretty good at math. I mean, he's way better at math than I was. And he actually enjoys it. But you really can't say that all people aren't really into math, but only a few. But you sound like a prodigy. You sound like math just came easy to you.
Well, not really. Like, I had to study math. I had to practice and do questions. Okay. But I didn't struggle at it as some other students did. So I was thankful in that aspect because I was able to get good grades, which is really important in high school to graduate. And I didn't hate math, which is fortunate for me. And I also stumbled upon actuarial science as one of the career paths for you to actually pursue if you're a math enthusiast.
Wow, that sounds great. And tell us a little bit more about your book, Strength in Numbers. How long did it take you to write it?
I actually started writing it in June. So I'm still in the early process of writing the book. I hope to get it published in early 2017, actually.
Oh, okay. I thought it was on the market already. Okay. Strength in Numbers.
Not yet.
Okay. It'll be Strength in Numbers. Chloe Hong. You have a website, right?
Yes, I do, actually. But I'm still working on some of the links for the website because I'm setting up an opt-in page for my book since it's an upcoming book and it's not in the market yet. So some links in the website may not work as of now because it's still under construction. Okay. But I can give you the website name if you'd like.
Okay. Okay, you can give that. You can give that. Give something out there for people can contact you and get in touch with you for this book because especially, it's about math, something that most people hate, except for the basic math. But getting into the hard parts and the most difficult parts, I'm pretty sure your book will enlighten people on how that math is really really easy. And can you give that out for the folks that are listening?
Sure, my website is www.myactuarialresource. So it's MyActuarial resource.com. Or if some of the links on the website is not working yet, can actually email me at my own personal email at Chloe Hong, CHLOEHUNG 91@gmail.com.
Okay. Once you're done writing this book, will you be writing another one? Are you, what do you think about writing? This is your first book. Will you be writing another book? Will you be, or are you gonna wait until this? Are you gonna wait till this book is out before you write another one?
I'll probably wait until this book is out first before I start writing on another one, because this book it's kind of complex because it's about the world of actuarial science where many people have not heard of. I'm just curious, have you heard of actuarial science before, George?
No, I'm never too old to learn.
Yeah, because that's a very common question I get when I tell people I studied actuarial science in university or I'm an actuary after graduation. I get the question, what is actuarial science? What does an actuary do? Does it even exist? And so that's what prompted me to write this book about strength in numbers, because I just want to provide a leeway, a career path for students who are really passionate in math to know that there is a major out there that would fully utilize their math skills and also allow them to pursue a high-paying job, actually, upon graduation.
Okay. So this book is about telling people or telling readers, you don't have to be afraid of math. I mean, there's a lot of good careers out there pertaining to math. You don't have to be afraid of math. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great piece. I think Strength in Numbers is a great piece. And I do think a lot of people are going to get who are afraid of math and who are, getting poor grades at math will probably excel in this course by reading your book.
Thank you.
I'm serious. Because I remember high school, I was so dreaded of math. I think when I was a freshman, I was dreaded of math. And as a sophomore, I was still dreaded of math. By my junior year, I was beginning to like it. You know, I was getting to like math. I was getting to like it, even though my grades were sort of down, but I was getting to like it because I was starting to understand it more. You know, but I actually mm-hmm. didn't see a need for it. I didn't see a need for it, though. I just, they're not going to hire me if I know trigonometry or geometry. Uh-huh. But I treated it, when I was doing math, I treated it, in my third year of high school, I treated it as fun. It was fun, something uh-huh. fun to do to try to work out. It was like solving a puzzle or something, you know, trying to put all uh-huh. the right pieces together, you know, so. So I do think mm-hmm. this book will be great for people who are math enthusiastics or people who are wanting to know more about math and not to run from it, you know, like it's a big bad monster or something. just stay in there and fight. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Chloe? Hello? Yeah, you there?
Oh, okay, I thought I'd be cut off there. yeah.
Go right ahead.
Oh, sure. I was thinking, many students struggle with math or they're afraid of math because the theory of math may sound very challenging, may sound very complex to them. But actually, if you really took the time to actually practice and do more exercises on it, you'll find that this is actually not a very scary subject. And also, if you really, really think that you don't like math, it's okay to not force yourself to actually like this subject because not everyone has the same interest and not everyone shares the same passion. So it's completely fine if you decide that you hate math in high school. Because there are so many other careers out there that are not math related. You could be a doctor, you could be a lawyer, you could be a teacher, anything. And they're all really, really good career paths. Mm-hmm.
You know what? But some of those professions that you called off, you do have to have some math, even if it's basic math. You know, you may not mm-hmm. need trigonometry or geometry or some of these other math, but basic math in some of these professions you do need to have, you know. So, mm-hmm. so you don't you agree?
Yeah, but it's basic math. So I mean, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, right?
Well, not that basic, you
know. so basic math comes easily to many people if you actually spend some time studying it and practicing it. So it's not really a challenge, especially if you choose a major that only requires a little bit of math.
Okay. Yeah, but you know, I mean, because I've told my son, I mean, you gotta know math. You gotta know, you know, to add up to manage money, I think you need to count it. So you're going to have to put a little bit of math in there, even if you're doing division, long division or multiplications, which I believe is basic math. You're going to need those kinds of skills to make it in the world. You know, basic uh-huh. math, that's what I'm saying. And, uh-huh. but you're talking about math beyond basic math.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Actuarial science, especially if you want to consider actuarial science, is definitely more than basic yeah. math. Definitely more very advanced math. So it's a lot of statistics and probability, not so much yeah. trigonometry and geometry around that okay. aspect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, Chloe Hong, thanks for being on the show. You've been so insightful.
Thank you, George.
No problem. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. All right, Chloe Hong on the George Wilder Jr. Show talking about math.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
I'm here today to talk about a disturbing question, which has an equally disturbing answer. My topic is the secrets of domestic violence. And the question I'm going to tackle is the one question everyone always asks. Why does she stay? Why would anyone stay with a man who beats her? I'm not a psychiatrist, a social worker, or an expert in domestic violence. I'm just one woman with a story to tell. I was 22. I had just graduated from Harvard College. I'd moved to New York City for my first job as a writer and editor at 17 Magazine. I had my first apartment, my first little green American Express card, and I had a very big secret. My secret was that I had this gun loaded with hollow point bullets pointed at my head by the man who I thought was my soulmate many, many times. The man who I loved more than anybody on earth held a gun to my head and threatened to kill me more times than I can even remember. I'm here to tell you the story of crazy love, a psychological trap disguised as love, one that millions of women and even a few men fall into every year. It may even be your story. I don't look like a typical domestic violence survivor. I have a BA in English from Harvard College, an MBA in marketing from Wharton Business School. I spent most of my career working for Fortune 500 companies, including Johnson & Johnson, Leo Burnett, and The Washington Post. I've been married for almost 20 years to my second husband, and we have three kids together. My dog is a black lab, and I drive a Honda Odyssey minivan. So my first message for you is that domestic violence happens to everyone. All races, all religions, all income and education levels. It's everywhere. And my second message is that everyone thinks domestic violence happens to women, that it's a women's issue. Not exactly. Over 85% of abusers are men. And domestic abuse happens only in intimate, interdependent, long-term relationships. In other words, in families. The last place we would want or expect to find violence, which is one reason domestic abuse is so confusing. I would have told you myself that I was the last person on earth who would stay with a man who beats me. But in fact, I was a very typical victim because of my age. I was 22. And in the United States, women ages 16 to 24 are three times as likely to be domestic violence victims as women of other ages. And over 500 women and girls this age are killed every year by abusive partners, boyfriends, and husbands in the United States. I was also a very typical victim because I knew nothing about domestic violence, its warning signs, or its patterns. I met Connor on a cold, rainy January night. He sat next to me on the New York City subway, and he started chatting me up. He told me two things. One was that he, too, had just graduated from an Ivy League school, and that he worked at a very impressive Wall Street bank. But what made the biggest impression on me that first meeting was that he was smart and funny, and he looked like a farm boy. He had these big cheeks, these big apple cheeks, and this wheat blonde hair, and he seemed so sweet. One of the smartest things Connor did from the very beginning was to create the illusion that I was the dominant partner in the relationship. He did this, especially at the beginning, by idolizing me. We started dating, and he loved everything about me, that I was smart, that I'd gone to Harvard, that I was passionate about helping teenage girls and my job. He wanted to know everything about my family and my childhood, my hopes and dreams. Connor believed in me as a writer and a woman in a way that no one else ever had. And he also created a magical atmosphere of trust between us by confessing his secret, which was that as a very young boy, starting at age 4, he had been savagely and repeatedly physically abused by his stepfather. And the abuse had gotten so bad that he had had to drop out of school in 8th grade, even though he was very smart. And he'd spent almost 20 years rebuilding his life, which is why that Ivy League degree and the Wall Street job and his bright, shiny future meant so much to him. If you had told me that this smart, funny, sensitive man who adored me would one day dictate whether or not I wore makeup, how short my skirts were, where I lived, what jobs I took, who my friends were, and where I spent Christmas, I would have laughed at you. Because there was not a hint of violence or control or anger in Connor at the beginning. I didn't know that the first stage in any domestic violence relationship is to seduce and charm the victim. I also didn't know that the second step is to isolate the victim. Now, Connor did not come home one day and announce, you know, hey, all this Romeo and Juliet stuff has been great, but I need to move into the next phase where I isolate you and I abuse you. So I need to get you out of this apartment where the neighbors can hear you scream and out of this city where you have friends and family and coworkers who can see the bruises. Instead, Connor came home one Friday evening and he told me that he had quit his job that day, his dream job. And he said that he had quit his job because of me, because I had made him feel so safe and loved that he didn't need to prove himself on Wall Street anymore. And he just wanted to get out of the city and away from his abusive, dysfunctional family and move to a tiny town in New England where he could start his life over with me by his side. Now, the last thing I wanted to do was leave New York and my dream job. But I thought you made sacrifices for your soulmate. So I agreed, and I quit my job, and Connor and I left Manhattan together. I had no idea I was falling into crazy love, that I was walking headfirst into a carefully laid physical, financial, and psychological trap. The next step in the domestic violence pattern is to introduce the threat of violence and see how she reacts. And here's where those guns come in. As soon as we moved to New England, you know that place where Connor was supposed to feel so safe? He bought 3 guns. He kept one in the glove compartment of our car. He kept one under the pillows on our bed. And the third one he kept in his pocket at all times. And he said that he needed those guns because of the trauma he'd experienced as a young boy. He needed them to feel protected. But those guns were really a message for me. And even though he hadn't raised a hand to me, my life was already in grave danger every minute of every day. Connor first physically attacked me 5 days before our wedding. It was 7 a.m. I still had on my nightgown. I was working on my computer trying to finish a freelance writing assignment, and I got frustrated. And Connor used my anger as an excuse to put both of his hands around my neck and to squeeze so tightly that I could not breathe or scream. And he used the chokehold to hit my head repeatedly against the wall. 5 days later, the 10 bruises on my neck had just faded, and I put on my mother's wedding dress, and I married him. Despite what had happened, I was sure we were going to live happily ever after because I loved him and he loved me so much. And he was very, very sorry. He had just been really stressed out by the wedding and by becoming a family with me. It was an isolated incident and he was never going to hurt me again. It happened twice more on the honeymoon. The first time, I was driving to find a secret beach. And I got lost. And he punched me in the side of my head so hard that the other side of my head repeatedly hit the driver's side window. And then a few days later, driving home from our honeymoon, he got frustrated by traffic, and he threw a cold Big Mac in my face. Connor proceeded to beat me once or twice a week for the next 2.5 years of our marriage. I was mistaken in thinking that I was unique and alone in this situation. 1 in 3 American women experiences domestic violence or stalking at some point in her life. And the CDC reports that 15 million children are abused every year. 15 million. So actually, I was in very good company. Back to my question. Why did I stay? The answer is easy. I didn't know he was abusing me. Even though he held those loaded guns to my head, pushed me downstairs, threatened to kill our dog, pulled the key out of the car ignition as I drove down the highway, poured coffee grinds on my head as I dressed for a job interview, I never once thought of myself as a battered wife. Instead, I was a very strong woman in love with a deeply troubled man, and I was the only person on earth who could help Connor face his demons. The other question everybody asks is, why doesn't she just leave? Why didn't I walk out? I could have left any time. To me, this is the saddest and most painful question that people ask, because we victims know something you usually don't. It's incredibly dangerous to leave an abuser, because the final step in the domestic violence pattern is kill her. Over 70% of domestic violence murders happen after the victim has ended the relationship, after she's gotten out, because then the abuser has nothing left to lose. Other outcomes include long-term stalking, even after the abuser remarries, denial of financial resources, and manipulation of the family court system to terrify the victim and her children, who are regularly forced by family court judges to spend unsupervised time with the man who beat their mother. And still we ask, why doesn't she just leave? I was able to leave because of one final sadistic beating that broke through my denial. I realized that the man who I loved so much was going to kill me if I let him. So I broke the silence. I told everyone. The police, my neighbors, my friends and family, total strangers. And I'm here today because you all helped me. We tend to stereotype victims as grisly headlines, self-destructive women, damaged goods. The question, why does she stay, is code for some people for it's her fault for staying, as if victims intentionally choose to fall in love with men intent upon destroying us. But since publishing Crazy Love, I have heard hundreds of stories from men and women who also got out, who learned an invaluable life lesson from what happened, and who rebuilt lives, joyous, happy lives, as employees, wives, and mothers, lives completely free of violence. Like me, because it turns out that I'm actually a very typical domestic violence victim and a typical domestic violence survivor. I remarried a kind and gentle man. We have those three kids. I have that black lab, and I have that minivan. What I will never have again, ever, is a loaded gun held to my head by someone who says that he loves me. Now, right now, maybe you're thinking, wow, this is fascinating. Or, wow, how stupid was she? But this whole time, I've actually been talking about you. I promise you, there are several people listening to me right now who are currently being abused, or who were abused as children, or who are abusers themselves. Abuse could be affecting your daughter, your sister, your best friend right now. I was able to end my own crazy love story by breaking the silence. I'm still breaking the silence today. It's my way of helping other victims. And it's my final request of you. Talk about what you heard here. Abuse thrives only in silence. You have the power to end domestic violence simply by shining a spotlight on it. We victims need everyone. We need every one of you to understand the secrets of domestic violence. Show abuse the light of day by talking about it with your children, your coworkers, your friends and family. Recast survivors as wonderful, lovable people with full futures. Recognize the early signs of violence and conscientiously intervene, de-escalate it, show victims a safe way out. Together, we can make our beds, our dinner tables, and our families the safe and peaceful oases they should be. Thank you.
Yeah, she's right. She's exactly right. But there's, she makes it sound, she makes domestic abuse sounds like it's a walk in the park. And it's not. It's totally not. Because there's so many of these young ladies out here. She's right, between ages 16 and 24, who are being totally, totally abused in so many ways. They're being sex trafficked all over the place. You know, and it's a appalling, beaten, their teeth been knocked out, their faces are swollen. You see them walking down the street, their teeth are knocked out, faces are swollen. Pretty young ladies, beautiful young ladies, being trafficking by young hoodlums, uneducated thugs and gangbangers. These gangbangers and these thugs, they walk the streets looking for young girls to manipulate. They look for the gullible ones. They look for the nice ones. They look for the friendly ones. Then they talk to them, and suddenly they start to beat on them. And they beat them, they beat them, they beat them, and they beat them. And she's right about one thing. If you try to get out of an abusive relationship, you tell the guy that you're not going to take it anymore, you're not going to deal with it anymore, he's going to kill you. There's no doubt about it. He's going to kill that young lady. He's going to kill you because he's going to say, you're not leaving me. He's going to kill you. He doesn't give a damn about the ramifications, all the consequences, all the consequences of his actions. He doesn't give a shit about going to jail. He wants you dead because you've left him. And this domestic violence is just, and sex trafficking is just all over the place. I mean, there's this, I'm not going to make the world a better place by sitting here talking about it, but at least it's an effort. These young ladies out here are being targeted. They are being hunted down by these gangbangers and these toothless thugs that are out here trying to what word is I'm looking for? Trying to round them all up and abuse them and put them out on the streets. You know, years I've been around on this earth a long time, and I've seen this stuff happen, folks, and it's still happening. Selling sex has been here since the beginning of time, and I don't think it's ever going to go away. But something has to be done. Something has to be done about these young, innocent, sweet young ladies and women who get caught up with boyfriend. Thuggish boyfriend, thuggish husband, you know, who winds up being their pimps or whatever, and abusers. Something has to be done because these people do not seek help. They don't seek help. I mean, they will take up for their abusers. If you try to hurt their abusers, they're going to turn on you. They're going to turn on you because you're hurting their boyfriend, and he done busted out her teeth, but she's still going to defend him. And if she tries to leave him, he's coming after her because he knows where she works. He knows where she goes to school. I think domestic violence and sex trafficking, the whole family plays a part in this. And like she said, you have to discover this early and nip it in the bud early, because the next step is death. Excuse me. The next step is death.
With some of the things that keep us dumb, the media, in particular the local news, 50% of airtime is wasted on previews of the shallow stories that are coming up next. The lead stories are usually the most disgusting and evil things they can dig up for that day. For instance, anything involving black youth will be a top story. Anything involving black youth and violence will be even on top of the top story. Anything involving black on black crime will be a top story. Anything involving black on white crime will be an even more top story. So you get the idea. They lie about everything. The weather reports are always wrong, except in places like Hawaii. And then they always have a daily health report by a, quote, specialist, except the people usually give out the wrong advice. And then they always end the report with, check with your doctor before following any of these tips. So that should tell you right there that it's questionable and suspect. Gas prices ending with 0.9 cents. I never quite understood this. Although I don't drive, I prefer to be driven. But I do observe things when I'm on the road. And in the early days, gas actually sold for 9.9 cents per gallon. So it wasn't dumb back then. But nowadays, it's ridiculous. And the day is coming when gas is going to cost 79.99 cents. And this display will look...
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Powerful Hurricane Matthew soars across Haiti, threatens southeastern United States. So it's a mess. This hurricane, what is it, Hurricane Matthew, a Category 4 storm, made landfall in western Haiti on Tuesday with winds reaching 140 miles an hour, and small towns and villages in the hemisphere poorest country brace for life-threatening winds, rains, and storm surge. Wow, that is something. And I'm hearing that also Cuba is in the eye of the storm, Miami, the Bahamas, and some of those other, the Caribbean on the East Coast. So this is dramatic. The National Hurricane Center in Miami issued a hurricane watch for a 230-mile stretch from Deerfield Beach near Fort Lauderdale to the Daytona Beach area, meaning hurricane forces winds of 74 miles per hour or higher could occur within days, 2 days. That's something. That's scary, you know. And we've just got to pray that... this doesn't get any worse. This is totally bad. And, you know, it's all over the news that this Hurricane Matthew and is barreling down on the East Coast. All of those people just running for their lives, losing everything. People are dying. And you just got to feel for them. You got to have a heart for them. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just not right. And this show is all about making the world a better place. You're not making the world a better place when people are dying. People are losing everything that they once possessed. But you just have to go on with your life. You can't sit and moan and groan about everybody who loses something or everybody who dies, because the world keeps turning. But you can think about these things every now and then and try to come up with some solutions to solve some of these things. We cannot solve these hurricanes. Maybe it's climate change. Who knows? And we're just going to have to pray for those people. Okay. All right, send them your prayers. All right. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. We just got through talking about domestic violence, and we did have author Chloe Hong on the show. She was talking about math. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people out there. What are you talking about, math? There's a lot of people out there who have taken math courses in classes, and some of the stuff that we talked about today on the show, I'm pretty sure it registered with some of you guys out there. So, hey, wow, this is the George Wilder Jr. Show, and she was calling from overseas. That's great. We get callers and guests on this show from all parts of the world, and that's great, and that's wonderful. And I thank her for being on the show. She could be on the show again. That's always that possibility. Great guests always are welcome to return to the George Wilder Jr. Show at any time, because this is the talk about times. Let no one rip your heart apart. They will surely try. All right, it's 7-Eleven straight up Chicago time. I believe it's around 71 degrees. 7-Eleven straight up Chicago time, 7-Eleven p.m. Okay, I mean, I have to say the p.m. because, you know, this is Central Standard Time. And that's important. That's totally important. So it's 7-Eleven p.m. Chicago time. And it's 71 degrees, I believe, outside. And it's beautiful. It's dark because of the shortening of the days because of summer has ended, and we just gonna have to deal with it. I'm thinking it's going to be a nice winter. I'm thinking we're going to have a great winter, a mild winter, because it's been so beautiful so far, you know, at least in the city of Chicago and in some places around the United States. But I can't say that for the southern East Coast, which is being banged and slammed by this storm. And we just have to pray for these people because they need our prayers. And we are here to give it to them, our prayers. Okay, let's see. Joe Biden speaks. And did you hear that once again, Donald Trump made a stupid remark on veterans, calling veterans weak because they have PTSD, and Joe Biden jumped in his ass. Once again, I think I talked about this yesterday on the show. Once again, Donald Trump, the presidential nominee, Donald Trump, puts his foot in his mouth. And Fox News, all over the news everywhere, is talking about Donald Trump and his graph. But however, his like I said before yesterday, his flunkies, his minions, his yes people are out and about around the media, television, talk shows, both radio and television, trying to defend Donald Trump. Every time Donald Trump says something goofy or stupid, they go around on this media blitz trying to explain what he really meant when the words actually comes out of his mouth. We know what he meant. It doesn't matter if it was a graph or a mistake or intentionally, it will be used in commercials and it will go against him. Okay. So Donald Trump, he has to, I think the guy, he has to study and rehearse and gain some knowledge on particular issues that he will be discussing in the public eye. He just can't come out there and go up to a mic and start speaking. He's going to say something ignorant. He's going to say something that he will be criticized on. And then his minions and his flunkies, they're going to be all over the airwaves trying to defend him. And it's indefensible, the things that he say. So we're going to have to. All right, we'll be right back.
Not to applaud tricks from the poli sci-fi movie The Manchurian Candidate too loudly, but anybody notice that days later we aren't debating whether or not Trump supporters are deplorable? We're debating how many of them are. And by the way, Hillary Clinton was dead wrong about this. Half? The Trump gang is trying to pull off the neat trick of making deplorable into a red badge of courage while simultaneously scoring martyr points by insisting it was an inappropriate attack. It's not going well. Somebody asks Mike iRobot Pence if he would agree merely that David Duke is deplorable, and Pence seems offended by the question and says he's not in the name-calling business, whereupon his buddy, Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah, tells Pence he at least must call Duke's racism deplorable and the Trump campaign must repudiate the alt-right. And then campaign manager Kellyanne Conway tries to pivot away to Hillary's health by claiming Secretary Clinton lied about her pneumonia. Unfortunately, when pressed about whether Trump should release his full medical records, she seems offended and says everybody, even Trump, has a, quote, right to privacy, apparently completely unaware that less than 3 weeks ago, Trump offered to release his detailed medical records to Dr. Oz, because Dr. Who is not filming locally. Then Trump makes a fool of himself by deciding not to release the full thing to Dr. Oz. And then he goes on Dr. Oz anyway and hands Dr. Oz a piece of paper. And Oz reads briefly from it and says, 267 pounds. And for all we know, the paper could have been a taco-to-go menu. And while that gaffe is still echoing, the deplorables again steal the stage. Video spreads of a protester getting grabbed by the neck and punched by a Trump supporter during his speech in Asheville, whereupon they eject the held, not the holder. And then a 69-year-old woman, after the same speech, tells a Trump supporter that if Trump gets elected, the guy had better learn Russian. And the first words he should learn in Russian should be, ha ha. So he allegedly decks the woman, who is apparently injured when the punch sends her crashing into her own portable oxygen tank. And this kinder, gentler Trump campaign, well, it is kinder, gentler. The Trump supporters aren't all wearing the same colored shirts yet. This comes as the campaign had seemingly pivoted to fewer big events with dangerous crowds in order to tamp down all the noise about deplorable. What was that exactly that Hillary Clinton said about them again? Racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic. And your point? But forget the supporters for a moment. What about the advocates? Racist? Well, the co-chair of Trump's campaign in New York, former Republican nominee for governor here, Carl Paladino on Twitter. Lynch, Loretta Lynch. It was a typo by a staffer, they explained. Ah, but 6 years ago, he sent out a video of an African tribal dance. The email was titled Obama Inauguration Rehearsal.
All right. The Republican National Committee proclaims Mike Pence the winner of the debate that hasn't even happened yet. And I'm talking about the vice presidential debate that's going to be going on later on tonight. This is crazy, folks. This really leaves me bewildered. This is crazy. The Republicans are claiming that Mike Pence, the governor and vice presidential candidate running alongside Donald Trump, that he has won the debate and the debate hasn't even started yet. This is what the Republicans are all about. These guys are so amazing that they actually make me laugh. You know, this is crazy. Okay, more than an hour before the vice presidential debate had even begun, Indiana Governor Mike Pence has already schooled Senator Tim Kaine. At least that's according to the Republican candidate. The Republican National Committee, which mistakenly posts a glowing review of the GOP vice president nominee's performance on this website Tuesday. These people are crazy. They are saying that before the debate, I'm repeating myself because I am so astonished. They're saying before the debate even begins that Mike Pence has won the debate. They haven't talked, they haven't been on TV, but he won. This is how the Republicans are just trying to make asses out of the American people, trying to make fools out of the American people, trying to manipulate the American people as if we really are that damn dumb. You know, but we're not. We're not. There's some out there who are, but I would think majority of the American people aren't dumb, are not stupid. And the ones that aren't dumb, that are not stupid, we are totally, totally disgusted by this. Totally disgusted. But there is no doubt about it. Hillary's going to be the next president of the United States. Even if you for Donald Trump, with all of this shenanigans and all of his scandals and all of his not paying his federal taxes and him saying that he's brilliant because he dodged taxes, I guess the rest of us who pay taxes, we're dumb and stupid because we're not as brilliant as he is to dodge taxes. And I'm pretty sure his minions will agree with that. Well, you guys are stupid because you're not Donald Trump. As if Donald Trump has carte blanche on just about everything in America, and we as Americans do not. This is just awful. I mean, it's funny, but it's not funny. It's laughable, but it's not laughable. It's pathetic. You know, for this guy, for the RNC to proclaim Mike Pence the winner of a debate that never happened yet. This guy must be really good. Well, we'll see. We will see. But, you know, the debate is not happening right now. But once it does, I'm pretty sure Mike Pence, he's going to be probably just like Donald Trump, loud, belligerent, lying. The moderator probably is not going to catch it or not going to ask for a probably will not be any fact checking. So we're just going to have to deal with what's going to happen. That by them saying that Mike Pence is the winner, now that makes me want to sit and watch the debate, because they've already projected this guy as a winner of a debate that never happened yet. As of now, by the time I get off the radio show, by the time the show is over, within an hour, the debate will have started. So by the time you download this show or podcast this show, you know, the debate will be in this particular debate tonight will be in your rearview mirror. And you know that this is a earlier show. But as of now, the debate is tonight, tonight is October 4th. This is what this is, okay? So if you podcast this show earlier, later, you'll know that this is a show that was recorded in the past. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show at 7:22 straight up Chicago time, Central Standard Time. Thanks to my guest, Chloe Hung. And we have been talking a little bit about domestic violence, and I think I'm going to cover that subject again because it's just heartbreaking to see young ladies walking down the street with big fat lips, broken, busted teeth, cracked teeth, swollen jaws and cuts and bruises all over their face. And they're still out here selling sex, you know, and the guy's driving around, the pimp is driving around the corner, checking them out, making sure they're at their post. This is domestic violence, and sex trafficking is something that I think America should pay a lot more to. And I think Congress should come up with some kind of bill, law, a real strong law that's totally, totally implemented and not just implemented, but enforced on these two subjects, you know, because it is prevailing out here. You got young girls being caught up into this, and they're clearly losing their lives, talented young ladies losing their lives to these dirtbag thugs who are out here selling their bodies. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to get into that a little bit more later on in the show. We have a whole month of great guests that's going to be on the show, folks, and I hope you do join me for that. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. All right.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Oh, help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all.
All right, Chicago Public Schools will remain open if the teachers strike next week. They're going to be open. I don't know why the teachers will not be there. Okay, if teachers walk off the job next week, all Chicago Public School buildings will remain open for breakfast and lunch for those who show up. That's what the Chicago Public Schools shared Tuesday in a contingency plan preparing for the possible teacher strike. School officials have also encouraged parents who would want to be able to keep their children at home to do so. CPS has budgeted $15 million so far to keep schools open during a strike. School officials have declined to say how many strike days that the money would cover. Okay, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. There will be a strike in the city of Chicago, and teachers will be on strike. That's a damn shame because they are always going on strike for something. I praise Mayor Rahm Emanuel for keeping the schools open. He's got to find a way to fight these damn unions who are up, who are messing around with our kids' education. Bye-bye, folks. Hope you join me tomorrow. Thanks for listening.